Yeah, appreciate it. All right, how are we doing here?
Still wondering about the Wildcat. Back in 2008, I think a lot of people, including yourself, will remember that. What Miami introduced. I'm wondering if you still see its impact around the NFL, or if it was more of a fad that kind of phased itself out.
I mean, you see it from time to time. It looked like Buffalo might have run a couple of plays last night, you know, with McCoy. Yeah, I mean, all those things, the Wildcat, unbalanced line, things like that. I mean, you always got to be ready for them.
What did you learn from that game? You know, when you saw it, how your players reacted, was there any?
I mean, it's really just a lot of elements of single-wing offense. We just missed some tackles, obviously didn't have it coached very well. So didn't coach it very well, didn't play very well. Not unstoppable, just didn't do a very good job on it that day.
That, I know that was prevalent in the college game at the time, especially with those Arkansas guys, but did that, I can't remember, did that come completely out of the blue with the Dolphins that year, in that specific week?
Well, again, the coach with the Dolphins was at Arkansas when McFadden ran it. So, you know, again, it's no matter how you slice it up, it's just putting the quarterback into the equation in the running game, which creates another gap, if you will. So if you play 8-on-7 or 7-on-6, then once the quarterback is part of the play, now you're 8-on-8 or 7-on-7. There's no extra gap. You know, you have to account for him. So that's what, you know, Mike Shanahan did with the Broncos offense. With all the bootlegs, you know, you had to account for him. So even though you could be 8-on-7, once you accounted for that bootleg guy, now you were 7-on-7 or whatever the numbers were. You always lost a guy. So it's just, you know, it's really just a numbers game. And those teams that run those type of plays, you know, teams like Navy that, you know, run a lot of option, run a lot of quarterback plays like they did with Reynolds. You run out of guys on defense. You can't outnumber. You just run out of people. So that's different versions of it, but it's all the same concept. It's adding another guy in the running game that the defense has to account for that you lose a gap.
Billy mentioned,
which was the single wing offense.
Sorry, you mentioned Arian Foster the other day. His balance still looks like he's pretty slippery with the ball in his hands coming off a major injury. Just is it the balance that sticks out the most to you, or what's made him a difficult guy to tackle that he's able to keep doing?
Well, I mean, I just say I think there's a lot of plays where at the end of the play he's not on the ground. Well, yeah, he gets pushed out of bounds or two or three guys tackle him, but he's still standing there and they blow the whistle and, you know, the play's over, but, I mean, he's not, like, on the ground. And there's a lot of plays like that. There's a lot of plays where he's on the sideline. I wouldn't say he runs out of bounds. He gets hit. He's up. The defender's up. He goes out of bounds. He ends up going out of bounds. Not saying he's, like, running to the sideline, but, you know, it was, honestly, that's the way Riggins used to run. Like, Riggins, you know, carried the ball 25 times a game, but he only got tackled 15. You know, it'd be another 10 plays where, at the end of the play, he's still on his feet one way or another. So I'd say that's the thing that's kind of, you know, when you start looking at Foster and watching him get tackled, there's a lot of plays where he just doesn't get tackled.
How long does it take for, the element of the surprise, I guess, is always there in week one, and I'm sure it tapers off a little bit into week two and three. How long does it kind of take before you're into the season and you say, all right, I know what this team is going to have on Sunday, and you can kind of rule out, you know, any drastic changes that they could kind of throw at you?
I don't know if you can ever rule them out, but I'd say, you know, the term midseason form is pretty accurate. I mean, what a team's done by that point, I mean, it's pretty much who they are. They've seen a lot of different matchups. However, they've evolved, you know, There might be a few things that are a little bit out of the fairway, but they're pretty close. Or there's a reason for why they were a little off the, you know, off the main line. But, you know, you just need to get enough looks, you know, 5, 6, 7 games, whatever it is, to see that. Doesn't mean somebody couldn't throw in a new wrinkle, and I think that's always part of the football. But, you know, there's only so many of those you can get ready and practice, you know, in a normal week. So you still got to be able to go out there and execute it. So I don't think it ever goes away, but, you know, there's a certain point where every team pretty much shows they're out there trying to win every week. They're not evaluating players. They show their hand, and then you know, you tell everybody what kind of team you are.
What kind of impression has Joe Tooney made on you? I think the last time we asked you about him, you said he was pretty close. This was during the preseason. He was close to locking something down, I think is how you put it. But what is he showing you since he's been here to have the role that he has?
Really consistent. And he's a smart guy. He's a good technique player. He plays with good footwork balance, hand placement. He's got good awareness. You know, he sees things well. I mean, there's room for improvement here. I'm not saying that, but you know, he's for his lack of experience, he plays like a pretty experienced player. He's been well coached, you know, both at NC State, you know, with Coach O'Brien and that system when he went in there, and obviously with Dante. And he's a good athlete. He's a good football player, and he's got good awareness, good instincts. Works well with the other offensive linemen, knowing, you know, what guys need help based on what the call is, what the protection is, who the players are, and so forth. Again, there's room for improvement. There's a lot of things he can learn, but you know, for where he is in his career, he's got a pretty good understanding of it. A smart player.
Really?
And I'd say also the fact that he's played all 5 positions, in the end, probably works in his favor. Not that he's taken a lot of game snaps at center, but he's been at center, he's played guard, he's played tackle. So, again, I think when you're a guard, you understand some of the issues of tackle. When you're a center, you understand some of the issues of guard, you know, vice versa. So I don't think those have been bad things for him.
This past week, and just looking at the personnel, especially in the interior of the line, whether it's Joe or David or Shaq or Ted, it's first or second year guys, it seems like. Are they beyond their years in terms of understanding what they're looking at in any way to allow them to handle?
Oh, again, it's, yeah. You know, maybe in a way, but I'd say the issue is just experience together. So, you know, the more that those guys play together, the more that David and Joe play together, you know, the better that'll get. Even if neither one of them ever gets any better, them playing together will get better. And they should get better because they're both young players. But you know what I'm saying? It's even if they're capped, there's a level of execution between the two of them, with Nate, with Shaq, with Ted, however it goes, that those guys just haven't played a lot of football together. They haven't, you know, seen some of the things or some of the players, their opponents, you know, second, third, fourth time around, like, you know, a real experienced group would do, that you could, you know, you could really gain some advantages on that. You know, we're just not there yet. We're getting there, but we're just not there.
Well, how would you characterize David Andrews and Jimmy working together? A lot of people talk about, you know, the cohesion between the offensive linemen, but the center quarterback relationship, that's
huge. Yeah, it's huge. Yeah, it's a critical relationship, especially in the National Football League and an offense like ours where there's a lot of communication and protections and, you know, recognition and so forth. Those two guys being on the same page is, you know, it's enormous. But David's very good. Jimmy's good. They communicate well, each of them individually and together, and they both understand the importance of it. They've not taken something for granted, and then, oh, I thought it was this, and then I thought it was that, and then somebody runs free because we weren't on the same page, and there's not very much of that, nor should there be. So I mean, it's critical. It's critical. It's a huge part of both of their jobs to be able to be in sync with the, you know, the other position, center and the guard, the quarterback and the quarterback to the center.
What improvements have you seen from Ted Karras since he's arrived there in the spring?
Well, I'd just say the overall exposure to, you know, this type of an offensive system. Again, different protections, different adjustments, you know, more variety in the running game than, you know, what he probably had at Illinois. I'd say definitely more. He's played, you know, all three interior positions, both guards and center. So, again, he's a smart guy. I think some of that playing different positions actually helps him play whatever position he's playing a little bit better because he understands what's going on around him. Again, that's part of the center's job is to, you know, quarterback the whole line, if you will, in terms of line calls and, you know, adjustments that they have to make. You know, we have the same five guys, but sometimes how you block them, you know, do you bump him and go to the linebacker? Do you go straight to the linebacker? Do, you know what I mean? Just how, like how all that works. There's a lot of fine points in there, but they're critical, really, to the success of that unit and naturally the success of the play. So, you know, it's just a lot more exposure, a lot of different things that he, I would say, didn't have a lot of experience with. He's gained a lot. He's smart. He works hard. He understands, you know, football concepts well, as Joe does, as David does. You know, Shaq's kind of in the same boat, coming from the offense he came in, which is, you know, threw the ball five times a game with turn protection. It's just a whole new world, you know. So those guys have all, you know, grown quite a bit in the last year or 2 years, whatever the case might be, in terms of systems. David, you know, obviously came from Brian Schottenheimer's system at Georgia. So he had a year of, you know, I'd say NFL-type offensive schematics. And so, but again, it's, I would say, in the process of going back to Phil's point of just getting everybody working together, understanding, you know, just collectively how to do things and how to do them more efficiently.
What have you seen from Chris Hogan in terms of work ethic since he's been in this building?
Great. Works really hard. Yeah. Chris is always ready to go. Works hard in every phase of the game. Passing game, his blocking, kicking game. He's always ready to go. You know, something comes up, he's not in there. Hey, Chris, jump in there. Boom. He's got his helmet on, his chin strap fastened. He knows what to do. He's really been, you know, impressive that way. We've asked him to do a lot of different things, played multiple receiver spots, outside, inside, again, multiple things in the kicking game. And he's, you know, he works really hard at it. It's important to him. And again, it's a process. I'm not saying it's all perfect, but, you know, he's definitely gaining on it. And he's a lot better than, you know, where he was a couple months ago. But he's been very dependable and, you know, quick to insert and you know, be ready to execute in those opportunities that he gets.
So what's the process for determining what the best type of matchup is for a cornerback or defensive back? Maybe not on like a week-to-week basis, but this guy works better against a bigger receiver, this guy against a quicker receiver.
Best way to determine it, I mean, I guess, is experience. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, when you practice against a team like New Orleans and Chicago, that you get exposure to different receivers. Not saying that, you know, who's better or who's not better. It's not even about that, but just, you know, it's another seven or eight guys that we get to cover in addition to the seven or eight guys that we're covering on our team, and then another seven or eight guys the next week against when Chicago came in here. So just, you know, the exposure of playing bigger guys, quicker guys, faster guys, different type route runners, how they stem and set up their routes, how they use their hands downfield, how they, you know, whatever it is. So it's just, you know, sooner or later over the course of the season, I mean, you're going to get all that to some degree. And the more you can practice against it and understand how to, what they're trying to do, what's best for you, you know, how we individually, how you play a guy, how I play a guy. We both got to cover him, but maybe we do it differently because our skill sets are a little bit different. And so, you know, it's just working through that whole process. So, I mean, I think it's really a lot of, I don't want to say trial and error, but experience of doing it against different type guys. And there are some players that, you know, they're very, they have a specific skill set, but they also have maybe a very specific route tree. You know, if they run certain, you know, when you look at the whole route tree, 80% of their routes are, you know, a certain type of route. vertical routes or lateral breaking routes or, you know, whatever it happens to be. And then as it relates to that individual player, then the techniques on him are a little more specific to what he actually, forget about what he can do, but what they actually ask him to do. You know, that becomes now a little bit of an overriding part of the criteria. So they want the guy to go deep, even though he could do other things, but that's mainly what he does, then you got to work more on defending that.
On Hogan, do you view him, or how much more differently do you view him now than you did when he first came in? It seemed like he was being worked a little bit more in special teams early on. Now it seems like it's kind of went the other way, the offense a little bit more. How different has your perception changed with him?
I don't think it's changed a whole lot. I mean, you know, when you're around a guy every day, like we've been with Chris, you know, he's impressive every day. He doesn't have a lot of up and down days. Every day is a pretty good day for him, which I would say wasn't unexpected, but you just don't know until you're around him. I think he could contribute for us in the kicking game. As we went through training camp, he was really, you know, our healthiest receiver. I mean, Danny wasn't out there. Julian wasn't out there for quite a while. Malcolm was out, and, you know, he missed time. So, you know, he was the guy that was out there the most. And so we, you know, tried to manage the volume for him just, you know, overall. But I mean, I think he could absolutely play in a kicking game. I think he could play outside. I think he could play inside in a passing game, which he has. So he could do all those things. I don't think he's going to be out there for every play of every game. So depending on who else we have, what we're trying to do, so forth, you know, part of his versatility is a real strength for other players because it might allow them to do something that, if they don't have that kind of flexibility, might allow them to do something they're really good at, and he can still, you know, be able to adjust. But, you know, I mean, Julian's like that too. He's a very adaptable player, so it's good to have those guys in the passing game, in the receiving group, so that if you want to move guys around, you know, play guys at different positions, you know, in the formation, then you have guys that can make those adjustments and not feel like you're losing a lot in the passing game.
Were there any Patriot representatives at the pro day he worked out at Fordham in 2011?
I'm not sure. I only know that we have two coaches on our team that covered him in lacrosse. So that's... Well, Steven covered him at Rutgers and Mike covered him at Hopkins. So... I don't know about working them out, but I know we have two guys that played against them on the lacrosse field.
Bill, Kevin Falk will be honored at halftime on Sunday. Can you talk a little bit about what he means to this franchise, and are there any guys currently on the roster that sort of remind you of what he can do?
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty high bar, you know, talking about Kevin Falk. You know, we have guys like James White or, you know, Vereen going back, you know, that had similar roles and had, you know, production. Kevin's pretty special. As I said this summer, I think, you know, many impressive things about Kevin, amongst them would be that I thought he played his best football in the biggest games, most critical situations, most critical plays, the times when we need him the most, is when he came through with some of his best plays. Carolina Super Bowl, the two-point play, I think it was the only time he scored the entire year, but, you know, what bigger play is there than that? So I'd say that's kind of typical of, you know, Kevin. I can still see him converting on third down or, you know, punt return situations, getting him in a nine-man, handling a short punt or, you know, blitz pickup so that we could make the play to somebody else, but, you know, him stepping up and making the block that we needed on a critical third down or two-minute play to be successful. So, I think Kevin's one of the great, great examples, and I've tried to point this out to players that I've coached throughout my entire career. Kevin's a player that came in, I mean, first of all the great running backs they've had at LSU, which have been a lot of them, you know, he's pretty much got every record. I mean, Fortinet might break a couple of them this year, but he's pretty much been the best guy down there of all the great ones they've had. His role in the NFL was different than that, and he accepted his role. He embraced his roles, and he was the best that he could be in those roles, and he's a Hall of Fame player. And, you know, instead of sometimes trying to make a role different, you know, instead of embracing the role that your team wants you to have and needs you to have, some players, you know, want a role that they want to have. And then sometimes that's a little bit of a conflict. So I think Kevin was a great example of coming in here. He started off as, you know, a returner and was a great runner, but kind of worked his way into more of a third down sub back. But he always had good run skills and he had a lot of good runs for us. He was great in the passing game. He was great in the return game when we needed him. He was a great leader. And we had backs like Corey Dillon, you know, he was a great, or Antoine Smith, or guys like that. He was not only a great complement to him, but he was a great mentor to him in terms of preparation and dependability and, you know, a lot of little things, just taking care of a lot of little things. And so the example and the leadership that he gave to the team was, you know, exceptional. It really was. And to a degree, a little bit below the radar, you know, not a big out front team captain and, you know, that type of profile. Yet the undercurrent that he had was, you know, arguably as strong as any, you know, kind of like Troy Brown. I mean, a little bit different than Troy Brown, but kind of like Troy Brown. So really, really special player. You know, had ball security issues, had blitz pickup issues when I got here. Came in, coach, what do I need to do? Kevin, here's what you need to do. He worked very hard at it, became very good at it. You know, it wasn't an attitude of like, well, look, here's what I'm good at, here's what I want to do. What do I need to do to help the team? Go out there and do it. And, you know, you're probably really lucky as a coach if you have a couple of guys. We've had a lot of guys like that. But he would certainly be up there at the head of that class. And honestly, I think it's great that he's been recognized for that. I don't even know how many games he started in his career, but I would venture to say not all that many. Yet you're talking about a Hall of Fame player that, let's just say, wasn't even a starter. But that doesn't really matter. When the game was on the line, he was always in the game, and he was always in the eye of the storm. And that really speaks more to me to the value of the player than, you know, whose name's in there on the starting lineup on the first play of the game. So, at 59 minutes of football left, I don't think that's the most important play, yet that's what a lot of people want to relate it to. Really, the most important play is the game-winning plays at the end of the game. Who's in there for those? That's what you really want to know.
Are you surprised that Hall of Fame and Canton announced the candidates for whenever that process restarts for this year? Yesterday, I think it was. A handful of coaches on that list. As somebody who's worked with a lot of talented coaches over the years that he's spoken highly of over the years, I'm curious as to your thoughts as far as assistant coaches go, how valuable those guys are to successful staffs, and if you feel like maybe... are they underrepresented at all in the Hall of Fame, guys that have spent the majority of their careers as assistants, or maybe their entire careers as assistants?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, assistant coaches have a huge impact on their football team. I mean, they make a tremendous contribution. I don't think any head coach really could be a good head coach without good assistant coaches. I mean, we just don't do enough coaching. You know, there's a lot of meeting rooms, a lot of instruction going on in there, and, you know, head coach isn't in very many of those rooms, if any at all. There's certainly working with the entire team, and there's, you know, I mean, I'm saying there's, you know, a role for the head coach, but the individual instruction that the position coaches and coordinators give and their guidance and direction and play calling on the team is obviously paramount. It's critical. So, yeah, you know, I mean, the Hall of Fame is a tough one. I mean, it's like, I don't even know what the criteria is for the Hall of Fame. I mean, we have guys that have played, you know, 15, 20 years and aren't in the Hall of Fame. We got guys that have played 4 or 5 that are, and vice versa. You know, you got guys that have had great short careers and aren't, guys that have had okay long careers that are. You got guys that haven't won championships that are. You got guys that have won a lot of championships that aren't. I mean, I don't, you know, like, what are we basing it on? So, I don't know, Assistant Football Coaches Hall of Fame, I mean, probably would be worthy discussion. But, you know, do you want to slight them relative to the other contributor? You know, I don't know. I mean, you got different sets of rules for everybody, too, coaches, players, contributors. I mean, you know, it's really, I don't understand it. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, but what little I know about it, it's pretty confusing to me. I have no idea what the criteria is, really. And if you talk to people who have been in that room, which I'm sure you guys have, sounds like there's a lot of confusion in there, too, about who we're voting for, what we're voting on, you know, how much of it's political, how much of it's, you know, campaign trail. You know, I don't know. It's not really my thing. The whole process, I'm saying, is not really my thing.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Okay. Thanks. Great. Yep. Thank you.